Okay, so today, for Mother's Day, I'm going to continue our series in the book of Acts. I hope you're not disappointed. We're going to talk about Acts chapter 19, which is a huge chapter for explaining so much of what's happening, like, in our world right now. Like, right now. It sometimes is like reading the newspaper instead of the New Testament. So here we go. We're going to jump right into the text and I'll do a little running commentary as we go, okay? This is Acts 19, verse 21. Paul is in Ephesus, and this is a headquarters for paganism, all right? After these things had ended, Paul purposed in the Spirit, when he had passed through Macedonia and Achaia, that's Greece, to go to Jerusalem, saying, after I have been there, I also want to go to Rome, must go to Rome. In verse 22, so he sent into Macedonia two of those who ministered to him, Timotheus and Erastus. You guys go into Macedonia. I'm going to hang here in Ephesus, Asia. So he himself stayed in Asia for a season. And at the same time, there arose no small stir about that way. In the early days, Christianity was sometimes called the way. And Mandalorian stole that from us. We started that. So there was no small stir about that way. For a certain man named Demetrius, a silversmith, who made silver shrines for Diana, brought no small gain to the craftsmen, whom he called together with the workmen of like occupation, and said, sirs, you know that by this craft we have our wealth. Moreover, you see and hear that not only at Ephesus, but almost throughout all Asia, what we call Asia Minor, it's Turkey today, throughout all Asia, this Paul has persuaded and turned away many people, saying that these are not gods which we make with our hands. So that not only this our craft is in danger to be set as worthless, but also that the temple of the great goddess Diana should be despised and her magnificence should be destroyed, whom all Asia and the world worships. And when they heard these things, they were full of anger and cried out, saying, great is Diana of the Ephesians. And the whole city was filled with confusion. And having caught Gaius and Aristarchus, these are two fine Christian men. They grabbed them. Men of Macedonia, Paul's companions in travel. They rushed with one mind into the theater, a theater that could seat thousands. They rushed into the theater. And when Paul wished to have entered into the people, he wanted to talk to them. You know, you have thousands of people gathered in the theater. Paul wants to say something to them. So when he wished to enter into the people at the theater, the disciples would not allow him. They held him back. They might have physically restrained him. You're not going in there. They did not allow him. And certain of the chief of Asia, in Greek those are called Asiarchs. They're the bosses of the city. They were chief of Asia and they were friends to Paul. So Paul had friends in high places. Certain of the chief of Asia, who were his friends, sent to him, exhorting him, urging him not to venture into the theater. Don't you go in there. Don't go. And so in verse 32, some therefore is like a mob crying out. Some therefore cried one thing and some another, for the assembly was confused. Like, what are we doing here? What's the problem? And the greater part did not know why they were gathering together. And they dragged Alexander out of the multitude, the Jews putting him forward. So this is a Jewish fellow. And you have to remember that most of the early Christians were Jewish. And so they are going to, the Jewish people who are not Christians are going to have Alexander explain to everybody, hey, Paul's not with us. You know, don't be mad at us. We didn't do it. So they take out this Jewish person, Alexander. He gestures with his hand and he would have made his defense to the people. Be mad at Paul. Don't be mad at us. We're not doing it. In verse 34, but when they knew that he was a Jew, all with one voice, about the space of 2 hours, cried out, great is Diana of the Ephesians. And just think of the many protests that we've seen since October on college campuses and in big cities. That's what this sounds like. Great is Diana of the Ephesians. And when the town clerk, he's a little bit like a mayor, but a deputy to the mayor. When the town clerk had settled the people, he said, men of Ephesus, what man is there who does not know how that the city of the Ephesians is a worshiper of the great goddess Diana and of the image which fell down from Jupiter? Since therefore these things cannot be denied, you ought to be quiet and do nothing rashly, for you have brought here these men who are neither robbers of our churches, pagan temples, nor blasphemers of your goddess. Therefore, if Demetrius, the silversmith who makes paraphernalia for Diana's temple. If Demetrius and the craftsmen who are with him have a matter against any man, the law court is open and there are deputies. Let them plead against one another. But if you inquire anything concerning other matters, it shall be determined in a lawful assembly. For we are in danger to be called into question for today's uproar. Like the Roman people might come here with their army to Ephesus and punish us because of this mob. We can't have a mob. We're in danger of being called into question for today's uproar, there being no cause for which we may account for this gathering. And when he had this spoken, he dismissed the assembly. All right, so this is a big mob, a big riot, and it's a big deal. Today we're going to look at the anti-Christian feeling that was there at that time and still exists today. And then we're going to talk about avoiding agitating non-Christian people the way it was then and the way it still is. And then we're going to talk about the Christian impact on the world then in those days as well as today. All right, so there was an anti-Christian feeling then, right? In yellow, I've highlighted. There was no small stir. They were full of anger, confusion, confused. It was a big deal. Thousands of people, evidently, who would like very much for this to have been a lynching. You should remember that America is not atheistic. Sometimes we think, oh, well, the whole university system is atheistic. And so I guess America is atheistic. But not really. What America really is peripherally, that is, they're not totally into this. It's just sort of like on their radar screen peripherally. They are peripherally, superficially, not deep into it, and eclectically. We take whatever parts we want. We are spiritual people. That is, as an American population total, we are not totally into spiritual things, but it's on our radar screen, and we think about it. We're not atheists. All right, but America is very deeply impacted by the hostility of atheism and by the hostility of demon-influenced worshipers who intuitively, because of the demons in them, right, who intuitively harbor ill will towards the Christian God and Christian beliefs. I showed you this last week or the week before. This is a model of the Temple of Diana. It was one of the seven wonders of the ancient world. As far as we know, this is the largest pagan temple that was ever built in the ancient world. It is bigger than a football field, wider than a football field, longer than a football field, 60 feet high. This was an amazing structure. And it is in Ephesus where this riot is taking place. And Demetrius makes little copies of this model out of silver, or he might be also making little copies of the image of Diana out of silver. And when people come, they get one of his silver images of the temple or Diana, put those in their pockets or their satchels, and that's for good luck. And he makes a ton of money getting these as tourists come and go. All right, now you don't know anything. Here's what's funny. You think you don't know anything about Diana's religion. Think, huh, I don't really know about that. You do too. You watch as we talk. You say, oh, you just didn't connect all the dots. But you know a lot about the Diana religion. We'll show you. All right, so here's the foundation of Diana's paganism. This was the trouble against Paul in Ephesus. In Diana's paganism, the entire universe, everything and everyone, is actually one colossal living, breathing spirit, which is female in its orientation. Sometimes this is going to be very similar to what you hear when people talk about Gaia, Mother Earth. Intuition, clairvoyance, and visualization will access this universal female spirit, which has energy, and it will access that energy for your life. That's the doctrine. The whisper of Diana's influence, this universal spirit, can come in two ways. It can come from within, as if these are my own thoughts, and the goddess, the universal spirit, is giving me these thoughts because I am part of the universal spirit of Diana. The other possibility is that Diana would come to you as a spirit from the outside to tell you something, perhaps in a dream, perhaps in a vision, and perhaps as a possessing spirit. So it might come up from within you as your own thoughts, or it might be a visiting spirit. Diana is the main goddess of the universe, who is the combination of all the goddesses. and from all cultures, even if you don't call her Diana where you live, it is still the one universal feminine spirit that is everywhere. She is the creator of her brother Apollo, who is the sun god, and she loves her brother, and she rules the world as the moon goddess. So we have the sun and the moon. She is called the goddess of fertility and celibacy. And you think, well, that's strange. How can you be for both? And the reason is when we talk about Diana as a virgin or Athena, if we were in Athens at the Parthenos, is supposed to be a virgin. But we don't mean that they are celibate. We mean that no man is their boss. No husband, no romantic partner. They don't need men. In Dianic Wiccanism, so you know about Wicca. Wicca is often based on Diana. And so in Dianic Wiccanism, immorality takes place between the priestess, which is basically any Wiccan follower. There's going to be immorality that takes place between the priestess of Diana and whomever she chooses. And their coming together in this immorality creates magical energy that can come to bear on the world around them. Diana is represented in popular culture as Wonder Woman. Of course, her name is Diana Prince in the comics. Also, if you know about anime, Sailor Moon has a character named Diana, who's the daughter of Artemis. Artemis and Diana are really the same in pagan mythology. Diana is the queen of the fairies, and she is also the queen of the witches. And so the queen of the fairies in some languages, the name Diana is actually the same as fairy. So she's the queen of the fairies, the queen of witches, the teacher of magic for all the witches. And she's deeply associated with midwifery because she's the protector of women, especially women who are in danger because of childbirth. And so the clairvoyant women and the midwives were the first Wiccan witches. She is often referred to in ancient literature as Diana Lucifera. You can see the word Lucifer there. It's because she's the personification of the moon and she's the light bearer like Lucifer. She has no husband, no male romance interests. So her followers have a special attachment to lesbianism and feminism and healing from the patriarchy. Many covens today, Dianic covens, feature lesbian romances and rituals. Dianic covens today practice magic in the form of meditation, visualization, and spell casting, and they are directing Diana's life-giving forces to their undesirable circumstances, whatever they might be. Now, this should be starting to sound a little familiar to you because these are the kinds of things that come across in popular culture all the time. I'm sending positive energy your way. If you have friends who do not say they're going to pray for you, they're going to send positive energy your way, they are following the religion of Diana. You see that the meme on the left, sending positive energy your way, is going to be represented by fairies. This is common. And, of course, it tends to be feminine in its orientation. So when you see this in popular culture, it's like, welcome to Acts chapter 19. Here we are. This is what it sounds like in our literature, in our social media. The universe responds to our thoughts and feelings. When we are vibrating in a positive place, we are in alignment with the flow of the universe and we feel unstoppable. So there's this great universal spirit that is in everything and in you. And if you are vibrating in accordance to that universal spirit, which has a feminine orientation, then you are powerful. And this entire universe has conspired to give you experience. Tap into the wisdom of the universal mind. Connect with the conscious universe. And sometimes this is referred to as manifestation movement. It will manifest if you say it. Sometimes the law of attraction, and you will hear more and more about that in our culture today. Twitter did some interesting work with this concept, and they were showing individuals who had achieved a certain dream, and this was all a law of attraction thread, and celebrities would say, I always wanted to sing the national anthem in the Super Bowl, and there she is doing it. I told everybody that you better get me a team because my music was going to go viral. And it has. They spoke it. And when they spoke it, it came to pass. And if you keep speaking, if you keep saying the same thing over and over again, the spirit of Diana, which is in and around you and vibrating within you, will bring it to pass. And so important celebrities are constantly putting this before us. Oprah Winfrey, Lady Gaga, Will Smith, Jim Carrey, Demi Lovato, Bella Hadid, Conor McGregor, Katy Perry, Jack Canfield, the editor of the Chicken Soup for the Soul series. All of this is around us all the time. So you see, you do too know about the religion of Diana. You just didn't know that you knew. So America is not atheistic. That's not what we are. What we are is peripherally, superficially, and eclectically spiritual. America is deeply impacted by the hostility of atheism and deeply impacted by the hostility of demon-induced worship ideas. So the hostility is there. All right, that's the anti-Christian feeling in Ephesus in Paul's day and in America today. Now we have to avoid, as Paul did in Acts 19, we have to avoid agitating non-Christians. That had to be done in Paul's day. His friend said, you are not going into that theater. There's going to be nothing but trouble. And the men of the city who were his friends said, do not go. And he did not go. So that's what we have in yellow font here. There was no small stir. This was a big deal. They were full of anger. The whole city was filled with confusion, and they rushed with one mind into the theater. And when Paul wished to have entered into the people, the disciples did not allow him. And certain of the chief Asiarch's officials of Asia, who were his friends, sent him, exhorting him, do not venture into the theater yourself. And when the mob had finally dispersed, Paul left. It's time to get out of Ephesus. You do not want to unnecessarily agitate the non-Christians. And today you have to do this as well. For all the reasons we just discussed on social media and that sort of thing, you have to be very careful not to agitate the non-Christians. Sam Harris, well-known atheist influencer, he says, Christians have abused, oppressed, enslaved, insulted, tormented, tortured, and killed people in the name of God for centuries. Now that's a very important person who's saying he doesn't like Christianity much. And that's the feeling, the anti-Christian feeling that we have today. Ted Turner at the bottom of that slide is famous for saying Christianity is a religion for losers. On the right-hand side, I'm reminding you that Christians now are considered the new bigots. And on the left-hand side, one guy says it's not very nice to be a Christian right now. But Justin Brierley was talking about a Marxist historian, Terry Eagleton. So obviously this guy is not like totally into Christianity, right? He's a Marxist historian. And here's what Justin Brierley says about him. Marxist historian Terry Eagleton has repeatedly pointed out to his secular contemporaries that Christianity's central story of self-sacrificial love is the revolutionary force that has most shaped the moral arc of the West rather than value-neutral science. So in other words, what he's saying is that Christians in their constant talk about self-sacrificial love have made the West a nice place. You can't hate the Christians because the Christians are the ones who made this place a nice place to live. YouTube host Dave Rubin says, I don't think it's a coincidence that generally believers right now are more tolerant. So as I remember, Dave Rubin isn't even a Christian, although I could be wrong about that. I hope he is. But he says, generally, believers right now are the most tolerant people in America. He says, who are the most intolerant people in America? It's the people who are constantly telling you how tolerant they are. That's the irony. It's the people that tell you you're a bunch of racists and bigots and homophobes. They're the ones who are so intolerant. It's not the Christians, but everybody's mad at the Christians. And everybody was mad at the Christians in Ephesus. Not that much has changed, right? Rex Murphy, Canadian broadcaster, I think he just died this very week. He said, to be a serious Christian in modern Western culture is to be the favored, easy target of every progressive thinker and half-witted comedian. It is to have your sensibilities and your deepest beliefs on perpetual call for taunts, mockery, and desecration. At a time when all progressives preach full volume, for inclusivity and sensitivity, for the utmost care in speech when speaking of others with differing views or hues. Christians, as Christians, are under a constant hail of abuse and disregard. There is nothing too low or too vulgar. So the Ephesians don't like Christians much. I've shown you some of these slides before, so I'm going to go through them very quickly. But just to remind you that the situation in Ephesus in Paul's day is not so different from what we're up against, right? George Yancey, sociologist in a secular university, he says 32% of all Americans like conservative Christians significantly less than other social groups. Like, yeah, we don't like them much. He says 2 out of 5 academics reported that they would be less willing to hire someone who is an evangelical. That is, they have explicitly stated they would discriminate against the job candidate who is a conservative Protestant. They say, oh, yeah, we would definitely discriminate against him. They say so. Academics with socially conservative perspectives occupy lower status positions in spite of equal productivity. So if you're in the world of education and you're quite good, you might not get promoted because of who you are as a Christian. He says there is widespread religious discrimination against Christian medical students. When you're striking for a program, you get discriminated against if you're an outspoken Christian. You have to avoid agitating the non-Christians. Paul's friend said, don't go in there. You can't go in there. And he did not. And then he got out of Ephesus after the mob. The Soviet regime persecuted 12 to 20 million Christians and sometimes killed them. In North Korea persecutes Christians more than any other country in the world. Possessing a Bible brings a certain sentence to prison camp. If you own a Bible and you get caught with it, you will go to the prison camp. And there you may endure torture, and the penalty for proselyting is capital punishment. They kill you for telling other people the gospel, just like Ephesus, right? Open Doors Ministry reports that, and so also does the British Foreign Secretary, so they're agreeing here. 144 governments around the world perpetrate or tolerate persecution of Christians. 144 governments out of about 200. They also say the inconvenient truth is that the overwhelming majority of persecuted religious believers are Christians. So mostly when you hear about religious persecution, it's persecution against Christians. That's the main group that's being persecuted, oppressed. In the Middle East, the population of Christians used to be about 20%. That was 100 years ago. Now it's 5%, going backwards in the Middle East. The population of Palestinian Christians has dropped from 15% to 2%, going backwards. It's not safe to be a Christian in the Palestinian area. Open Doors Ministry again says 1 in 3 Christians face high levels of persecution in Asia. For many Christians in India, daily life is now full of fear. In India, it's not safe to be a Christian. They might hurt you for that. All around the world, we have this trouble, not just in faraway places. Here in the Church of England, a British Christian school fired a teacher in the school and reported him to the police as a potential child abuser, because he told them they might not want to embrace woke ideals. He said, I told them to love the person even where you profoundly dislike the ideas. I suggested that they may, but need not, accept traditional beliefs about marriage and the reality of sex differences. No one should be told they must accept an ideology, either wokeism or Christianity. And for that, he was fired and turned in as a child abuser. Tim Keller would have received an award from Princeton Seminary, mind you, in 2017. But the students protested because he wanted pastors to be men and husbands to be the heads of the house. And so the award was rescinded. You can't let that happen. If you've watched the popular TV series The Office, you might know who Rainn Wilson is. He says, I do think that there is anti-Christian bias in Hollywood. As soon as the David character in The Last of Us started reading from the Bible, I knew that he was going to be a horrific villain. Could there be a Bible-reading preacher on a show who is actually loving and kind? You can't let that happen. Kevin Sorbo, actor, he says, my faith certainly hurt me in Hollywood. For me to get called in to read for anything, it just dropped drastically when I came out of that conservative Christian closet, so to speak. I used to read for a lot of pilots and TV shows. It's very rare now. Actress Gina Carano from Mandalorian, she was terminated by Disney because she said that people shouldn't hate others just because they have the wrong views. Since in United Kingdom they adopted the Equality Act, foster couple, foster parents, got in trouble because they had an opinion on homosexuality. A doctor was forced to leave his position as a social worker because he didn't want to entrust children to same-sex couples. Christian adoption agencies have been forced to close. A city council person was terminated for refusing to officiate at a gay civil union. A government-hired marriage counselor was terminated because he didn't want to give intimate advice to a homosexual couple. Päivi Räsänen, a Finnish Lutheran member of parliament, she has been tried for hate crimes in Finland because she posted some Bible verses on the topic of homosexuality, and she criticized her own Lutheran denomination for participating in pride marches. In British Columbia, female beauticians were hauled to court because they wouldn't do bikini waxing on men pretending to be women. In Canada, if you even dare to advise a young person not to be gay, you could be sentenced for up to 5 years in prison. In Colorado, a baker was tried in court because he refused to make cakes with obscene words and shapes on them. In the state of Washington, a florist had to give up her flower shop because she was brought to court not wanting to serve same-sex weddings. A high school football coach in the state of Washington was fired because he prayed silently by himself after the football games. Lori Smith, the website designer, she was brought to court because she didn't want to do website content for a same-sex wedding. On June 16th, 2015, that was a big day in America. That was the day the United States Supreme Court said now all the states have to recognize same-sex marriage. When that took place, that was basically a reprimand to us. And it was basically saying that the biblical faith we follow is inappropriate, contrary to civil rights, a threat to public good, deserving negative career ramifications, and possibly borderline illegal. And so that's why all the court cases, right? So we have to be very careful, just as Paul did, not to agitate the non-Christian forces because they are a little bit mad at us right now. But let's talk about Christian impact. And here you see in the yellow font, just because all of this bad was happening in Ephesus, that doesn't mean that there weren't great things happening in Ephesus too. Moreover, you see in verse 26, you see in here, this is, you know, the complaint of Demetrius and the silversmiths. You see in here that not only at Ephesus, but almost throughout all Asia, all over Turkey here where we live, this Paul has persuaded and turned away many people. Like, there's a lot going on here. And just as two examples of this before we close. For example, in the Middle East, just because Christianity is kind of hard, don't give up. We're doing okay. So in the Middle East, in 1910, there were only 80 Christians in the United Arab Emirates. Just 80 in the whole nation. That's kind of crazy, right? And in Saudi Arabia, there were only 50 Christians. Today, between those two countries, we have 1 million Christians. That's in the Middle East. That's hard going, you know? And most of those are converts from Islam. In Iran, where conversion to Christianity is still a capital offense, they put you to death for becoming a Christian in Iran. Still, we think there are between 250,000 and 500,000 Christians in Iran right now. Again, most of those converting from Islam. And there are a lot of Christians now popping up in Bahrain, Kuwait, Oman, Qatar, and have had dramatic increases in the Christian population. And to go back just a little further, if we go back to the Korean War days, you know, between Vietnam and the Gulf War, we had the Korean War. If we go back to the Korean War days, we divided Korea into two parts. One is communist and one is free. And you'll see that in North Korea, there is at this moment only 2% of the population as Christians. That's not so good. But South Korea, we have 29%. Now just notice this. 29% doesn't mean that we're a radical majority in South Korea, right? But we have enough now. We have enough to tip the balance. And that's what you need. You need a critical mass of Christians just to tip the scales and make things better. And so in 1900, there was only 1% Christians, but now 29%. How does that affect day-to-day life in the two Koreas? In North Korea, people expect to live to be 69 years old. In South Korea, 79 years old. How does it affect money? Well, in North Korea, people make about $1,800 a year. In South Korea, about $32,000. As you can see, it's much more pleasant to live where the Christians are than where the atheists are. Where the gospel goes, good things happen. And as far as government corruption, North Korea is tied with Somalia as the number one worst government for corruption in the entire world out of 168 countries. But South Korea is the 37th best country for not having much corruption in all the world. And so you can see where the gospel goes, good things happen. And that's the way it was in Paul's day. That's the way it is in our day. And here's our conclusion. Of course, every free spirit, and we all fancy ourselves to be free spirits, right? Every free spirit person has a natural anti-Christian feeling that is stoked and stirred by demonic influences who hope to hit God where it hurts. And where does it hurt God? When the human beings he created to be his friends turn against him and join the rebellion, that's hitting God where it hurts the most. All of us are going to have to live with this anti-Christian heat all of our lives. As long as we're in this world, we're going to have to live with this. In the midst of that, we should always show courage and super love. Don't give up. You're okay. Courage and super love. Be kind. We know there's heat against us. Be kind. We should sometimes fly under the radar because we don't want to unnecessarily aggravate the non-Christian population. So you can't just all blurt out whatever you want all the time. To fly under the radar. They wouldn't let Paul go into the theater, right? Like, don't go in there. You also have to stay away, avoid troublesome situations. But always be confident that the message of Jesus is still impacting the world in an unearthly way. This is the true grace of God in which you stand. So that's what we learn from Diana and Ephesus. Can we stand and be dismissed with prayer? Father God, we ask that if anybody today is sort of melting under the pressure of the world, that they would see that this is the true grace of God in which we stand, that this is a wonderful thing that we have in the gospel, to follow the Savior of the world, to change the world for better wherever we go. I pray that that would encourage us, and if life is a little hard, that we would still be courageous and, of course, super loving. I pray that we'd be able to extricate ourselves from non-Christians who are agitated. And I pray, Lord, that for your sake, for your reputation and pleasure in the world, we would be able to tell the gospel to the next person and help that person as well. Now as we go, Lord, can we ask again your special blessing on the mothers in our midst today? The women who have nurtured us and taken care of us. The women who took a chance on doing something that's very hard. Because once the little ones are brought into the world, they're just one simple yes away from eternity in heaven, forever in paradise. Bless these moms. Bless their children, we pray. In Jesus' name, amen.